American. We are not American. Say it in your heart. Say it when you sleep. We are not American. We will die as Hawaiians. We will never be Americans. The Americans, my people, are our enemies. And you must understand that. They are our enemies. They took our land. They imprisoned our queen. They banned our language. They forcibly made us a colony of the United States. America always says they are democratic. Lies! That is a lie! They have never been democratic with Native people. They have never been democratic with Indians. They have never been democratic with Hawaiians. The United States of America is the most powerful imperialist country in the world. In the world! They control the United Nations. They control the Pacific Ocean. All these nuclear submarines circulating throughout the Pacific. The United States of America is a death country. It gives death to Native people. And the only way to fight the United States of America is to be political. Kuhe! 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 Kuhe!
Capitalism and all the isms, you know what I'm saying? And all the isms, you know what I'm saying?
Everybody be cool, it's the rubbery!
All right, everybody, we are live. Welcome to another Friday morning Yak stream, and thank you so much for joining. I appreciate the absolute bubbles and hummingbird feathers and cactus flowers out of all of y'all. I really do appreciate it. I'm feeling good today. Mental health check-in, feeling good. I was not tired last night, so therefore I didn't sleep a ton, but it's because I'm energized and I'm feeling good. Excited for this stream. So this stream is gonna be like a half and halfer. The first half, we're gonna go about an hour because I got my time constraints, you know the drill. But the first half, I'm gonna give the latest updates from Maui, including what I've heard from my good brother up Mauka, which of course, as always, we are always sending you and your family lots of love and good vibes. So I'm gonna go over the latest I've heard from him. I'm gonna play some clips from the latest Shelby Thompson. So Shelby Thompson is a resident of Maui and her mom narrowly escaped Lahaina. And she is a repeat guest on Ryan Christian's program, The Last American Vagabond. So I'm going to be playing a few clips from the Shelby Thompson interview as well. And then I have a video from my good brother Brandon Thomas about some crazy shit, like that possibly predictive programming stuff. And I have another video I want to show about how lasers can actually set shit on fire, because people are trying to say like, oh, that's nonsense. Direct energy is nonsense. But I have a video that demonstrates that you can start a fire with a fucking laser, which probably not news to my Rockfin fam, but you know. And I'm still just grounding in with my stream. So I'm still just, this is just for the Rockfin fam. So I do, you know, spread the word, tell a friend, like, share, subscribe. Anything really, really helps. So yesterday was crazy because there was a friggin', so we've had a monsoon season so far in the valley, which is like, means what it sounds like, that the sky keeps trying to have a storm and it's like, it's not allowed to happen. It feels like that. It feels like the sky keeps trying to storm and it's not allowed to happen. And there was that Instagram video about some weather machine that was being brought to Arizona and everyone was like celebrating like, oh, that's so cool that the weather machine got is being brought to Arizona. How amazing. And then also we're having the monsoons, the second monsoon in 3 years. I find it a little bit sus, but last night, it did actually rain. It rained. I wish it would have rained more, but it did rain. So my rain barrel got like a little bit. And but before the rain hit, the dust storm hit. So I was driving through like a friggin' insane dust storm last night. So much so that I was out this morning with my computer duster trying to dust off my radiator of my car, because I read that sometimes like the dust can fuck up with the radiator. And my neighbor Reynaldo is walking by as I'm doing this, and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm trying to clean." He's like, "That's a computer cleaner." I'm like, "I know, it's all I got." He's like, "Go to a gas station, get like a real air pressure." I'm like, "Oh, I guess that's a good point." And I guess you're supposed to do it while the engine's actually on too. So, hey, I'm learning over here. That's why I got neighbor Reynaldo. Keep me on point in the vehicular situation. Let me know like if the sound or whatever is having issues. For some reason, it says that my signal is low, which makes no sense because I'm like right next, but hopefully this works out. We do the best we can. Mental health check-in. I'm feeling grounded and purposeful and energized. And I, you know, every day is like a kind of a struggle with anxiety and stuff like that. And so I have been feeling that. But I've also been feeling like just very energized. It's a raw sort of energy. It's like potential energy. I'm like, brr, you know? And so I did have a really beautiful meditation last night. And I had to like work a little bit to check in with my chakra system last night, because I was having the anxiety and I was having what are referred to as intrusive thoughts. That's my new favorite thing. Intrusive thoughts, not my favorite thing. I don't like intrusive thoughts. I just like the phrase because it's like accurate. You have these intrusive thoughts sometimes. But I dug deep breaths, and I was able to check in with my chakra system, and I felt the little toruses spinning like vroom. And I love that. So then when I did finally fall asleep, I slept really well. And here I am. So the first half of this stream is going to be the latest from Maui and some thoughts that I've had about it, as well as some mantra information that has come through, because I have been continuing to meditate and do the shamanic journeying in regards to the situation on the whole world, but specifically the situation on Maui. And then the second half of the stream, we're going to be joined by my good brother, Dr. Emerald Huggins. So Dr. Huggins is going to come back, friends. And this is an exciting one because we're going to be shooting the breeze, chatting, catching up, all that stuff. But we're also going to be introducing a series that I'm going to be doing on this channel that we are going to be doing. I'm going to be posting it to this channel, this Rockfin, as well as to my RSS feed, shooting it out in the RSS feed. If you have not done so already, please subscribe to the Barbarian Noetics Podcast. This is the Barbarian Yak Fest. This is my video show that I do with my co-host, Dr. Sylvie Salinger. She cannot be here today, but she will be back again soon. But please also check out my podcast, the Barbarian Noetics Podcast, if you have not done so already. So we'll talk about it once Dr. Huggins jumps on the stream, but we're going to be doing like a really cool series that is all about what I would describe as universalizing and demystifying psychiatry and psychiatric terms. Now, that includes psychological terms. It includes psychoanalytic terms. It includes like Jungian psychology. And we're going to have that healthy back and forth about what are the roles of synthesized pharmaceutical medicines versus, say, plant medicines versus fungal medicines, you know. I personally am feeling more drawn specifically to the fungal medicine. I feel that it is good for my body. I feel that it's an adaptogen. I feel that it's symbiotic with all the other mushroom supplements that I take. You know, so I'm taking all the mushroom supplements: cordyceps, reishi, turkey tail, chaga. You know, and so I feel like it all works together. And because I have trust issues, just like I have trust issues with YouTube and Rumble, which is why I'm only streaming to Rockfin, I also have trust issues with Big Pharma. And so I don't really love the fact that I still do use, I use one Big Pharma synthesized medicine for my mental health still. And I have cut down on the dosage. But it's because I don't, see, with the fungal medicine, like I know where that comes from. Comes from the earth, Like if I buy a supplement from Paul Stamets, I trust Paul Stamets. If you don't know, Paul Stamets is the mushroom guru. He did that TED Talk, which no one likes TED. TED fucking sucks. But Paul Stamets did do a good TED Talk called something like 7 Ways Mushrooms Can Change the World. If you want like a little intro into Paul Stamets, amazing. He's like the mushroom guru. So like it all folds into this trust issue thing, which all folds into my mental health check-in, because I have to feel like safe and trusting if I'm gonna, like, in order to feel comfortable being authentic, I have to like trust the environment in which I'm being authentic in. So that's why I'm kind of leaning more towards the plant medicine and the fungal medicine, and I want to wean myself off of the big pharma synthesized medicine. But also, Dr. Huggins is like, he's actually the professional. He has all the letters after his name. He has all the training, all the knowledge. And so it's going to be a really cool back and forth just about demystifying psychiatry and demystifying psychoanalysis and psychological terms. We're going to dig into like what terms actually mean, some misconceptions about them, and we're just going to talk story. And Dr. Huggins is just one of the most beautiful freaking people on the planet. So I'm very excited about this. So as soon as Dr. Huggins jumps in, we will enter the second part of the stream. So let's go ahead and begin with the first part of the stream, where I want to share with you all some videos. This first video, so the first few clips are going to come from the latest Shelby Thompson interview. She went on Ryan Christian. And I value the perspective of folks who are on the island and eyewitnesses. And my good brother will be able to join the stream one of these weeks, but it may take a while, because part of the reason why the situation on Maui is so salient on my heart, and so it's with me all the time. I'm constantly sending good energy, and because I know my good friend. He's one of my best friends in the world, and he's a very strong, tough, stoic person. And he's being tested to his limits. And so I didn't hear from him for a few days, and I was, you know, I wasn't nervous because I know that he's helping others and there's so much to do, but I did hear back from him, which made me so happy. But he did say that he wished that he wasn't so drained. And that's pretty much, and then he said that he's excited about the supermoon. So he said that he wished he wasn't feeling so drained and that he's excited about the supermoon. And that's all like the nitty gritty details that he gave me. So just like, again, this is a situation where we need to keep talking about what's happening and we need to continue to meditate collectively. And this is what really came through and continues to come through in meditation. When I meditate about Maui, when I meditate about the state of the world, and when I meditate about what I perceive as a dramatic escalation in the, there is a kind of like a sustained asymmetric war being waged against the people by the elites. And I see the Maui situation as like a escalation of that. And unfortunately, you know, obviously, I don't know, I'm not Nostradamus over here. I'm just a little raven doing a podcast. But unfortunately, I have a feeling that perhaps the Maui attack was some sort of opening salvo, unfortunately. And I just feel as though there's going to more events, unfortunately, might occur. And these are orchestrated. This is my opinion now. This is speculation. Shelby Thompson agrees with me that these are orchestrated events by people that want to hack the human spirit and they want to control humanity. And they are orchestrated tragedies designed to traumatize the population. So again, it always comes back to we have to be smarter, more agile, and stronger. And we have to be fit because we're in a fight. We're in a fight. So like Muhammad Ali, he was one of the best fighters to ever live. Also, Khabib Nurmagomedov. It's a hard last name to say. Khabib, probably the best pound-for-pound MMA fighter ever. What these two fellows had in common is they kept themselves in better shape than everybody. They were in amazing shape. So Muhammad Ali would use psychological tactics and physical prowess and endurance to defeat his opponents. He would make his opponents angry. He would fuck with them psychologically. But he would also, he was such a hardcore conditioner that he would make sure that he would be in better shape, meaning he would have more endurance. And, you know, when you're in that good of shape too, it all connects with your brain and we're electromagnetic machines. So when you're in really good physical shape like that, your electromagnetic machine is also in really good shape. That means your neuroplasticity is on point, you know. So I think you see what I'm saying. We gotta make sure that we're smarter, stronger, more agile, quicker than, unfortunately, than the what I consider to be a very dark, shadowy cabal of elites that are wanting to harvest our data and hack our spirit. And I'm not going to let them. And I know that my Rockfin fam is not going to let them. Listeners aren't going to let them. So let's not let them. But we have to be like, we got to be on our toes. We got to be strong. So the first video I'm going to share is a young woman who is just speaking about her. This was the very beginning of the Shelby Thompson, the second Shelby Thompson interview on Ryan Christian. A young woman is just telling her story about what she experienced, or what she is experiencing and what she is perceiving. So let Boomer Raven present. Oh, that's interesting. My computer is being weird. Okay, there we go. All right, it's being weird, but we're going to get through it, friends. We're going to get through it. All right, let this play.
I don't really know how to start this, but I just wanted to spread the message to people on mainland about what's really going on here, because the media isn't doing us any good at all. We're not okay. We're not okay. We are emotionally damaged. A lot of people are physically injured. A lot of people have lost their family members. Only 25% of the burn zone has been searched, and there's already been 110 deaths, and it hasn't been the high impact burn zone. Like, we're fucked. There is over 1,300 people without a roof over their head right now, me included. I'm lucky enough to have friends, but all of us are fucked. They're putting us in 30-day, like, hotel stays in order to find everybody houses, but in a place where it's hard enough to find housing and hard enough to find jobs as it is, now that there is more people looking for jobs and there is less houses available on the island, everybody's fucked. And the thing for me is that there is this grand sense of community here, like nothing like I've ever seen before. The gay pride marches, at Black Lives Matter protests, like I have never seen so many people come together and give up their own beds for people that just lost their house. But that's the problem. It's that nobody else is doing anything. Nobody is helping. It's all Kanaka. Like, people that live are the only ones that are helping at all. And that doesn't go to say that all of the people on mainland are doing anything wrong. It's not your fault, but the government helping at all. And nobody seems to have any idea what's going on over here. This is the biggest natural disaster. It's caused the most deaths in U.S. history. Like, isn't there more fucking going on? Like, I've calmed down. I've talked to so many of my friends on mainland that quite literally have no idea that there is 1,300 people packed in shelters and living out of their cars and having to move onto the streets and that aren't getting assistance and that aren't getting walked through these steps. They have no idea that the death count is so big. They have no idea that the majority of people that have perished are going to be the elderly and the children. They have no idea that our alarm system on this island is the biggest. It's the strongest in the entire nation. I think it might be the strongest in the whole world, but not a single fucking siren off. Why is this not bigger news? Like, our government fucked us, didn't give us any warning. We had to flee our houses. We lost fucking everything. And nobody knows. 1,300 people are displaced right now and hundreds are fucking dead. Why does nobody know? And I'm sorry, I wanted to add one more thing. It's that this isn't like a fast road. There's almost no recovering from this, especially not in a decade, maybe not in two, who's to say? But our biggest industry over here is tourism. And now that our biggest tourist city burnt down, we are going to lose so many jobs. So many people are going to continue to lose their houses. People are going to have to sell their land to sources that they shouldn't just because nobody's going to be able to afford anything. Like, this isn't this isn't a ball game. This, we're going to be working on this for decades, and we're going to need support for decades. And it's pretty obvious that no one is going to stick around and help. Nobody showed up in the first place, really. So just spread the message. Yeah.
All right, so that was the first clip I wanted to show. Again, just people that are on the island, eyewitness accounts, very important. She makes a lot of good points there, and she also speaks like truth about what's actually happening, how they're not getting any help, and how this is, while there's like the horror of the actual event and everyone who's displaced and all the missing people, including the so many missing children. But then on top of that, there's also like the sneaky land grab at the same time. And I know that there's like little tricks being played with the land grab where they are like, they're taking DNA from survivors, and they're saying you have to like match your DNA. Survivors have to match their DNA with the people who perished. And like, but unfortunately, because the fires burned so hot, because again, in my opinion, this was not a natural occurrence, this was something else. The fires were burning so hot that it was melting the aluminum and making it run like lava. Like the car's aluminum was melting and running like lava. So there are no remains for a lot of folks. And then a lot of people just are missing. They haven't been found. They haven't been identified. They're just missing. And that's the number that is being just not reported in the mainstream media. So again, the gap between what's actually happening and what is being reported in the mainstream media is so big, and the gap just seems to be getting bigger. And so you almost have like two separate realities in a way. And so we have to make sure that we live in the actual reality, listen to people like that young woman, listen to people like Shelby Thompson, listen to people like my good brother up Malka, listen to people who are actually there, so we know what the fuck is actually going on. All right, the next clip from this interview, I'm about to go to it, and she talks about how they've been not just fencing off, they have been like militarizing Lahaina, the zone. They've been completely eliminating any access to Lahaina. They've put up an opaque black fence, and they have these sort of like special operative figures guarding the fence and making sure that no one can even stop or take a picture or anything. So let me let Shelby explain.
Go in there. And when you see it for your own eyes and you see the FBI agents parked every 100 yards, even in areas that there is no bodies, there's no burn zone. You know, why can't we park up here on the bypass and look into Lahaina? Why can't we even go and hold space there? They had to get approval by the FBI and the government to put crosses up. We're not even allowed to do that. It's bizarre.
It doesn't matter go ahead. Please continue.
Oh, yeah. And I was just going to say, you know, when you think about the children, any other disaster, if it was a school shooting, you have every child's name, picture, birthday, and parents by 4 or 5 hours. Why don't we have one photo? Where are the parents? This is where I'm so confused. And I feel like it's so nefarious, because as a mother, I don't know one other mother or father that would just silently, where's the children? Where's their body? Like, the fact that, you know, we have maybe reporters that are, you know, asking where the children are to the mayor before parents, I wonder where the parents are. And that's why I think this cover up is so massive. I think it's in the thousands. I think it could be 5,000 or more people. Truly, I believe that, because if 2,000 children are unaccounted for, where are the parents also stating that these children are unaccounted for? They also have to be missing. And I mean, we know that there's an extensive tunnel system. The East Maui Irrigation System has hundreds of tunnels under Hawaii, let alone the lava tubes that naturally exist. I mean, there's so many questions to be poised. But why isn't every channel, 2,000 children are unaccounted for? That's a 9/11 of children.
Right. It doesn't.
2,000 children are unaccounted for. That's a 9/11 of children. And I'm just going to pull the screen share down and put the screen share back just to double check that I remembered to share the audio. So I'm pretty sure I remembered to share the audio, but just let me know in the comments if you can't hear it. But so, yeah, so if you just again, you have to kind of like, with this, these types of situations, these types of what I perceive to be orchestrated tragedies designed to traumatize us, you have to use your heart and you have to use your gut. And with, she makes very good points. You have thousands, possibly. I mean, it's so staggering, it's difficult to even talk about or comprehend, like a 9/11 of children is her words. And then all the parents, like, where are all the parents? And why are the parents, where are the pictures? Why aren't we seeing pictures of the missing kids? You know, like usually when there's like a school shooting or something, you see like all the, you know, there's all like the profiles and the pictures and like, oh, this person tragically lost their life and all this kind of stuff. And there's none of that this time. It's just like radio silence. And then on top of that, they're like, they're erecting this black fence and putting paramilitary operatives to guard it so that you can't even go close to it or take pictures. It's all just incredibly sketchy. So now I'm going to share again, make sure I shared the audio, and I am going to skip ahead a tiny bit. Yes, it does say I'm sharing tab audio, so this should be good. And I'm just going to skip ahead like a tiny bit here.
Maui for what happened, $700 a family. That's more. Like, that just makes me sick. I'm sure plenty of people have pointed that out. Yeah. I think that's crazy. Well, so what do you actually think they're covering up here, in your opinion? Because I know we're kind of just guessing here about what we think is happening, because you're right. I mean, none of this makes sense. All the FBI presence, the covering up of the area, the inconsistencies of the information. Like, what is your gut telling you that they're trying to hide?
I mean, I'm very deep in the fox den. I'm one to say that, you know, I believe these are satanic globalists. I think this could be a massive child sacrifice, especially considering the date that they did it on, the way that they did it, the place that they did it, being that this is such an energetic place on the planet. You know, I mean, in my heart of hearts, that's what I feel. I feel like this was what they want. They wanted, and you know, they have to do rituals like this so they can build up energy to do it other places, and they can, you know, they can breed their nefarious actions by starting it off with a bang. And I mean, if 2,000 children are missing, wow, they fucking did it, didn't they? And it's disgusting. And I mean, that's how I feel about it. Whether I, you know, maybe the cover up will be the land grab. Maybe the cover up is the smart city. Maybe we're actually going to war with China. And, you know, I mean, Hawaii is the closest landmass to Asia. They've already been talking about disassembling the Pearl Harbor base. I've been learning more about that with the military leases that are expiring. So is this their way of making a new military base?
You mean the United States?
Yeah.
I'm going to pause it right there. So yeah, so just this is again, like, so that we understand that what the people on the island are actually feeling. In the first interview, Shelby really made it clear that the people on the island, they know in their hearts, they know that it was not a natural occurrence. They felt attacked. They feel attacked. They know in their hearts that it was an attack. This is speculation on my end, but I'm just saying the people on the island, that's what they are saying. And so what she says about like the building up of the energy, it's so spooky and fucked, but at the same time, like, unfortunately, it's a possibility. And that's why, unfortunately, it's a possibility that this is some sort of like opening salvo to more orchestrated tragedies designed to traumatize us. Because again, the idea is to break down the personality. It works individually and collectively. You break down the personality through trauma, and then you can rebuild it in your own image. So they're obviously trying to remake Maui into something. I don't think they're going to succeed, because I know how strong and beautiful the Polynesian people are, the Hawaiian people are, and all the Kama'aina and the people just living and being on the island, like my good brother up Mauka. Like, these are strong, powerful people. I don't think the nefarious forces are going to succeed, but I just think that it's important to realize that this is like the conversations that are happening, because otherwise it's hard to make sense of what's happening. All right, it's getting close to when Dr. Huggins might be dropping in, so I'm going to skip to the last clip from Shelby right now, and I'm going to let it go.
On the 8th.
Right. And you can see the next line he says, and in that interview, they gave no indication anyone had been hurt as this was happening. you know, that sounds like a willful, they don't want people to know that. And again, it could be a cover up of their liability or something bigger, but that's pretty clear.
And he's the same person who said, oh, I don't regret sounding the alarm. And it's like,
or not sounding alarm. Yeah.
Right. For not sounding it. And it's like, so when people realize you don't regret not sounding the alarm and there's 2000 children missing, that's why the military is here. They want martial law to ensue. They want.
Quick pause. I think that's a really good point that Shelby makes right there. And my heart feels that that's correct, that they almost want, they want there to be some sort of reaction, some sort of reaction that would then precipitate martial law. And this is like an example of how we have to be smarter and more agile and more flexible and just, again, smarter than the behavior managers and the narrative controllers and the nefarious elites. Because that would give, if something occurred, if there was some sort of action taken by the people who are just completely heartbroken and don't probably have very much left they can lose, you know, folks who lost their kids or who lost their whole family, these people don't have a lot more they can lose. When people don't have much more they can lose, that's when actions are taken, and then they can then institute martial law and make it even, lock it down even harder. So I don't know the answers of how to move forward, but I do know that you have to be smarter than the people trying to control you, and giving them a reason to crack down even further and curfews and martial law and all that stuff, that would play into the plan for this. So I just think she makes a really good point. All right, I'm going to continue playing a little bit more here.
Want there to be a huge issue, because I mean, that's what it's pointing towards.
Yeah.
I mean, at least if we have any heart in our bodies as humans left, that this should be revolt worthy.
Yeah. And it gets even crazier when they go to the day before, right? So on August 7th, the day before all of this, Hara said he decided to ready the National Guard resources. You know why? As you know, because of a red flag warning about the hurricane passed, the Hurricane Dora passed south of the state. Red flag warnings are issued when the risk of wildfires spreading rapidly through the dry brush is high. So not only do we now know that they had these warnings, that they were aware of this the day before, didn't turn the water on, didn't turn the alarms on, didn't do anything in addition to Hawaiian Electric taking no effort the entire year to keep themselves safe from this. It's hard not to feel an organized action here, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one thing about the water that I would like to say is, you know, I heard that one gentleman, I never remember anybody's names, but he was saying that they couldn't reroute the water away from the taro farmers. And then he goes into talking about how sacred the water was. That's just actually a complete lie. Like nobody, the private entities are the ones that own the water rights in Maui. And, you know, it's not these little taro farmers and stuff. Like the water was stolen from them as well. So to throw the whole, you know, Hawaiians under the bus and say, oh, well, we couldn't get the water because it was going to a taro land. That is so offensive. And, you know, I think that they turned off the water simply because, one, they knew that this elderly population, they were going to stay to defend themselves. They were going to turn on the waters. They were right. going to try to save their home. They want the death toll to be as high as possible. And that's why there wasn't a fucking military ship from Pearl Harbor. They have the water hoses that can shoot ocean water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 1,000 feet, like they could have been posted up on the shore of Lahaina, dousing the whole thing out right. within an hour.
This meeting that we're talking about the day before was in Waikiki, right? So they were on Oahu and they were talking about the warnings, the risks. So they were well aware the day before, they were aware that morning, they're aware in the middle of it. And the whole time, you're right, it acts absolutely inexcusable that they wouldn't have had anything coming from Oahu to help at all. Or the fact that FEMA is lying about being there early, even though they have an office in Oahu and only set up on the 16th, as their own reports show.
This is kind of, you know, another unrelated detail, maybe not to do with this, but I think it's.
All right, I'm going to pause it right there, everybody. So those are the clips that I really wanted to show. Again, I'm gonna continue to talk about this and continue to unpack it as I understand the facts more. But there, a lot of times when you have these, in my perception, orchestrated tragedies, there's like these other things that the government is doing other things at the same time as the tragedy. Like on 9/11, they were running like simulations of like flight. They were running some sort of emergency simulations, and the fighter jets were like busy doing other shit on the morning of 9/11. On this day, they had the emergency management people were on Oahu doing like some sort of FEMA freaking emergency preparedness meeting while the actual emergency is taking place. And friends, my man is in the building, Dr. Emerald Huggins. So I'm going to bring him in right now, and then I'm going to finish up this segment, and we're going to then talk about this exciting project that we're going to work on. So here we go. Dr. Huggins.
Hey. How's it great going?
Good. It's great to see you.
Good to see you too.
Do you mind if I just finish up a couple minutes on this? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So, and you can jump in, and any comments or thoughts that you have, please jump in. So to finish up this segment now, we're going to move into the next phase of the stream with Dr. Huggins. I have been doing a lot of meditating and shamanic journeying on what's going on because it is so unsettling and disturbing, and there's so much unseen that there is like some darkness that's being hidden. And so it's like, this is where collective meditation comes in, and the power of our power as electromagnetic machines. Like, we are very, very powerful. So last night while I was meditating, now again, not just on the situation on Maui, but on the situation on the whole world, I think a lot of people, the vibes are very high. People feel like a little bit on edge. I think a lot of people are kind of being tested. They're being stretched right now to their limits. And that's not a bad thing, because neuroplasticity thrives when we grow from our edges, and when we're tested to our limits, as long as we stay strong and balanced and centered, we can actually thrive within that. So there's good stress and bad stress. The stress is a part of life. And so if you use it as fuel and you kind of ride it and you feel like these emotions and you use that as momentum and fuel, it can actually help you. So I shared the last stream on Maui, I shared the mantras that came through in meditation. I had another mantra come through last night really, really strongly. And this mantra is actually from my ancestors. It's my grandmother used to say this mantra all the time. And so the word God is triggering for some people. So I am gonna use the mantra that came through for me directly, which had that word in it. But I want to encourage people to, if you're triggered or turned off by the word God, to replace it with source, universe, or flow. And the mantra was, let go and let God. Let go and let source. When we're stretched to our very limits and we feel like we can't go any farther, that's when you can really allow power of the ancestors, power of the Great Spirit, that can help you. It can help like ground you, give you the strength. It's very real. And every time I meditate on the situation, it always comes through with the importance of connecting with the ancestors. That's like the number one thing, the foundation upon which everything rests, is connecting with ancestors, connecting with ancestral power. Let go and let God. Let go and let source. And with that, we're going to move now into the second half of this stream with my good brother, Dr. Emerald Huggins. And Dr. Huggins, wait, are you frozen right now, brother? Oh, Dr. Huggins is frozen, I think. What a bummer. I think he'll pop back in a second. So that's it. That's it. And that's that. Like, the information coming through is so troublesome and difficult that it's like hard to understand like what's, it's hard to know how to proceed. And so these mantras that come through, I feel that they are like coming through from sort of some sort of greater power, some sort of greater source. And sorry that Dr. Huggins froze. Hopefully he comes back. But because I do want to really talk about this project that we're going to do. So I have just really been leaning in heavily on that, like connecting with ancestral power. And we all, that's one thing that all of us have. We all have ancestors that we can connect with. And there is like cultures across all time and space, all over saltwater spaceship Earth, cultures always honored ancestors. Let's bring Dr. Huggins back. Dr. Huggins, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. I think it's because of the storms that's happening here. The internet connection is like weak or
it's
something.
Spotty. If you continue to have trouble, hopefully you don't, but you could always try to turn your camera off, because sometimes it's better without the camera. But right now you're okay. So, okay. But yeah, so I was just, I was just talking about connecting with the ancestors and how much that's been coming through for me, and how that's something that we all have. We all have ancestors. And like, all these humans had to come together and overcome struggles and survive. We are the product of not only 4 billion years of organic evolution on Earth, but we're also the product of so many generations of human beings that survived, that got together, that loved, that thrived in order for us to exist. And so it's something that we can all, it's something we all have in common. We all have these ancestors, and ancestral power is incredibly important. So Dr. Huggins, would you, I know that you have before, but would you just, go for it.
You know what, actually, I just wanted to talk about that a little, if I could.
Absolutely.
Because I was recently at Big Sur at the Esalen Institute. And I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it, but.
I have, yes. Yes, right now you're there.
Oh, so sorry. But yeah, so it's a retreat in Big Sur, California. And I would treat for a tobacco ceremony with Erica Gagnon. She is a tobacco leader, and she just is just so amazing and so great. And a concept that she really talked in extensively on was the ancestral trauma, and also the lineage that is passed down from generation to generation. And this is the first time I've heard this explanation, but she started by explaining that we are mostly made of water. And when we are embryos, we are made even more. I forget what percentage it is that we are made of water. Mm-hmm. And that same water that makes up us is the water that made up our parents. And the same water that made up our parents is what made up their parents. And the same water, and that water is generation to generation to generation. And I just love that explanation because it makes it so tangible to see
keeps
from generation to generation.
You're cutting in and out, but You're good right now, so.
I just love that concept. I thought that was just a really great explanation of water being passed down. Us mostly made of water, their parents mostly made of water, and that water is just transferred from generation to generation. I just love that.
It's like a through thread almost that goes through the generations.
Exactly.
And agua es vida, water is life. Like, and water's influenced by vibrations and energy. And so that alone is a very powerful concept. And just last week I was talking about this gentleman, Victor Schauberger, who discovered about like water activation and how water spirals a certain kind of way, and like the flows of rivers, and how that actually generates currents. It generates electricity and power. It's like nature generating its own strength, like from just allowing to be. And that concept is so powerful. He'll be back, I think. Okay, good. There you are.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
You know, you're all good. Cool. So let's segue now and talk about this exciting project that we're about to embark upon, because I'm freaking stoked for it. Really, really quick. I know that you have introduced yourself before in past streams, because friend of the show, Dr. Huggins. Yes. But just let listeners know, let any new folks know who you are and what you do, and also your education and your credentials, because you have a lot of knowledge.
Sure. Thank you so much for that. My name is Dr. Emerald Huggins. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner here in sunny, not so sunny right now, Phoenix, Arizona. And I own a psychiatric practice called Awareness Oasis Psychiatry. And the premise of my practice is to provide services for people who would want to awake, who want to have aha moments and have this dialogue about their mental health and to gain more access into creating new strategies, new habits for what they're doing and how to better help their mental health. And I primarily specialize in BIPOC, queer, and also allies. And from the ages of adolescents to young adults. That's where I really feel like I thrive, and I know that patient population really well. And I can really empathize with how hard it is right now in those transition periods of adolescence to young adults. So, yeah. So.
And one thing, like, I we always return to this, but one thing I love about Dr. Huggins is, like, heart-centered. And that's something that keeps coming through in the meditation, too, is, like, as we're riding this, surfing this time, this is a wild time, there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of, and it's, like, you, it's so important to come from and to ground in and center in that place of, like, the real deal, what's actually happening, which is human beings connecting with one another and thriving in a real way in real life. And I just, I love that. And you also, Dr. Huggins has a way of, like, you have a way of, like, showing up at the perfect time. Cause, like, when you reached out last night and you wanted to jump on the stream and you talked about this idea, it was like perfect timing, because I also at that moment was feeling quite overwhelmed and a little bit like, you know, I struggle every single day with anxiety and depression as well sometimes, but the anxiety is the really big thing. And so your electromagnetic, like, makeup, it, like, calms me down, like, just you being you. So I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, I really appreciate that comment. And I get that all the time. I get that feedback all the time. And I remember even when I was in school, one of my professors, love her so much. But so we have to do these, like, mock sort of patient interactions, and our professors would monitor us. And so she said, "Wow, Emerald, you're just like a easy, like a Sunday morning, just a cup of coffee. And I just feel so at ease." And I really appreciate that, because I think we just need to be more responsible with the energy that we bring and know ourselves, know who we are, and stay in that and try to turn up the volume in that as much as possible.
That is such an excellent point. And this is something that we also seem to return to a lot in our conversations, is that, like, so let's say that you want to I think most people are very good people. We have good hearts and we want to, like, help people. We want to make the world a better place. But that's where you say about being responsible and accountable for your own energy, because if your energy is deactivated, stagnant, negative, even if you're repressing all this stuff, then when you try, you're going to be trying, which, first off, I don't think that's the best, to try so hard. Like, the shamanic thing is, like, you try and not try at the same time. It's like riding the wave. You try to stay balanced, but you allow the wave to carry you forward. And so that's, like, essential, because so if you're not centered and balanced within your own self, and that doesn't mean toxic positivity, like, it doesn't mean that, like, you have to lie or ignore or repress. Like, when you come into the coffee shop and I ask you, Dr. Huggins, how are you? I mean that. And you give me an authentic answer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am just so exhausted with these masks and trying to be something that you're not, and saving face for you know, these people. And like you said, it's not about toxic positivity, you know, it's, and a lot of negative emotions are human emotions, but we also, I want us to live in this awareness about what's going on, and also trying not to transfer that to other people, so that we're not putting our negative emotion on someone else.
So I'm so glad that you used that magic word transfer, because one of the things that kind of kicked off this project, and so Dr. Huggins and I are still kind of like, this is an introduction to this series that we're going to do, but we're still ironing out the wrinkles and the details of exactly what we're going to call it and all that kind of stuff. What came up for me, because I was meditating on this as well last night, Dr. Huggins, I was meditating on this series and this project that we're going to embark upon. And some ideas that came through for me are universalizing and demystifying. So I think that is like so important for everyone, and especially like the communities that mean so much to you as well, the BIPOC and the queer community, as well as everybody. Like people get freaked out and scared about, as you mentioned last night, people get scared of medicine in general, and like psychiatrists, and you know, they're, and it is like, there's sometimes there's reasons why people have trust issues also. Like sometimes people have negative experiences, or they get prescribed things that are really horrible for them, and they don't, they're not believed. And I know that's a problem, like with I've heard that that is like an issue as well with marginalized communities, is that they're not always even believed. Like they are speaking their truth, and the asshole doctor is like, yeah, I know what's best, whatever. And it's like, so this is the demystifying of the idea of psychiatric medicine and psychoanalysis in general, and diving into like what these terms mean, and coming specifically from your perspective, because your voice and your perspective is so incredibly valuable. So
I love that concept. I think that's so so on point and apropos with what we're doing. It feels so right and so genuine to be moving in this way. I also kind of love the fact that this conversation feels like, to me, that conversation that you have with someone in a restaurant and you're like brainstorming ideas on a napkin, and this is just the napkin. Like, this is not like, it doesn't have to be a full realized idea. I love that, you know, this is going to grow organically, and that it's going to be what it be. And
yeah, we're going fungal, not viral, with this idea. And like, I love how you say, like, writing it down on the napkin. It's like this audio, this experience is like our napkins. Sorry, blocked out for a second. Are you there? Dr. Huggins? Dr. Huggins is having some issues with his interwebs today because of the storm. Oh, you're back, but not.
Yeah. Right.
There you are.
Yeah. And also, okay, good. I hope we're back. But yes, I love this conversation. I think it's so great and where we're headed. And then, you know, I can just, there's another concept that I want to explain, but it doesn't feel like I will be able to get it out. But I think that, let me just try. Okay, so I was hiking recently. Actually, I wouldn't say recently because it's hot as I don't know what here, but maybe a few months ago. And just doing my thing where like I'm meditating, praying, like this like sort of combination of, you know, receiving information. And one of the things that really rang true for me is that I felt a little overwhelmed by my voice and, you know, saying, you know, why do I have to say anything? Like, what is it about me? And also, like, I see 30,000 other people doing the same thing, and you know, why would I do it? Why is my voice important? And the divine, the universe, the source, God, whatever you would like to say, really showed me that language is so important, right? And not only are you and I speaking English, but we also come from different backgrounds and we say things differently. You and I have a common goal, but we also think differently, right? Like, you know, So one of the things that really rang true for me is the fact that not only do we have language, but we have our business, we have our different opinions about something. And I don't know about you, but I may have heard a lesson from somebody else, but it didn't register. It didn't, like, and it did not, I didn't receive it. I wasn't able to receive it. But when I heard it from someone else in a different way, I got it. I understood. And that's...
Oh, cut out again. He'll be back in a second. But yeah, I think that his, that idea is really important to what he's saying.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, so I just think, you know, your voice matters. And it's not about, you know, appealing to the masses and affecting a lot of people. You just have to affect your inner circle, your microcosm of in the universe. And if multiple people are affecting them, you know, we can see this collective elevation rather than trying to beat ourselves up or put too much expectation on trying to do more than what, you know, what we're supposed to.
Which that will knock you off balance too if you try to start doing more than what you're able, like, because things have ripples and effects. So when you do, like, when you are showing up for your immediate circle and your immediate environment and you're being present, that does have, like, very real ripples out into the universe. And, you know, you positively affect and connect with one person, then that person goes out and positively affect and connects with others, and then all of a sudden you are really creating change in your neighborhood, in your community, in your city, in the world. Like, it's real, but you have to, you have to stay balanced on the wave. You can't get knocked off and get blown around and smash your face on the reef, because then you're not going to be able to help anybody.
So. Exactly. So,
Can we talk about the last time you were at the coffee shop, we discussed, like, some terms, some psychological terms that I was completely. Because I feel like that might be like an give like a little idea of a taste of like one aspect of this project, that we're going to be like demystifying these concepts and straightening out confusions and coming at it again with that electromagnetic connection that actually allows for like the flow of communication. I think that's so important. So you mentioned the word transfer, and last time we chatted at the coffee shop, you mentioned transference. And so I had this idea of what I thought transference was from a psychiatric perspective, but I was incorrect. And there's this difference between transference and projection. Mm-hmm. And would you mind just speaking on that for a little bit? Because it's interesting.
Yes. Right. Okay. So transference is a term that we use in psychiatry for a patient interaction. Most notably for a patient interaction. So transference is when, you know, say I am seeing a patient, and that patient sees something in me or feels some energy or some tone or something about me that they see in someone else in their life that may be close to them. So it may be a parent or a guardian or someone or a spouse or someone. So they start to react the same way that they do from the person that they're close with to me. So they start to maybe not be as authentic, or they might say something that they wouldn't necessarily say to their provider, but maybe to someone that they're close with, because I mimic that person, right? So
it's kind of like a transference of style of interaction. Like, you're transferring, let's say, like with your father or something like that. Like, you're transferring the way that you interact and the kind of the the ruts and the ridges of like how you are with your father, you transfer that onto the doctor, the psychiatrist. Is that kind of like the idea?
Exactly. And so we always kind of see that as sort of a possibly negative thing, because you want to have, how do I say, as much unbiased, untainted sort of relationship and with the patient, but also you want them to be able to speak authentically and not necessarily treat you like that close relative or person.
Okay. And so then when you explained that to me, I was like, oh, A, I didn't know that's what it was. And then B, it reminded me of the concept of projection.
Right.
But it's not. That. Yeah. So mm-hmm. there's a difference there. So let us know what projection is from like the psychiatric perspective.
Okay. So projection is an interesting concept. So any interaction or dynamic in our relationships can be deemed as projection. So projection is the concept of me thinking that a person, like say my partner, that me thinking that my partner is being disrespectful to me. But in return, I'm actually being disrespectful to him because I'm projecting that thought and emotion on him. I'm the one who is being disrespectful, but I'm calling him disrespectful because I'm actually doing that. So I'm projecting to him that you're being disrespectful, but actually I'm the one that's actually being disrespectful.
Man, that is I feel like that is a very common kind of pitfall and obstacle that people have in all sorts of relationships. And it's a real tricky one because you want to, you know, especially let's say like with your partner, for example, you gotta have that completely open, clear communication. And so, but then if you're stuck in a projection, you're going to be thinking in your mind, I'm just speaking my truth right now. But in reality, you're actually projecting on, and that can be really damaging. Like how can we catch ourselves in that? And what are some like techniques or tactics for like, I don't know, catching ourselves and then pulling ourselves out of that trap? That's a tricky one.
Oh, that's so tricky. And my main tool is to seek therapy because, and this is what makes sense about therapy, and this what was the aha moment for me years ago about therapy, is that because of, you know, conditioning and things that I have experienced over my life, I have, like, say we all have a closet, and our closet is organized based off of the things that we are interpreting, what we are getting from conditioning and experiencing life. And depending on what you have experienced is how organized or where things are in your closet. But therapy allows someone else to help us open our closet to see how disorganized or organized things are, right? Like, you know, it may not make sense to put like the broom in the back of the closet because it should be in the front, or, you know, it may not make sense to, you know, put, you know, say there's a shelf of you know, my issues versus someone else's issues, and maybe things are reversed. Maybe, you know, I'm projecting and saying that you're the problem, but actually I'm the problem. So maybe, you know, that needs to be reorganized. So I think therapy really opened the concept of like someone else helping me see how disorganized my closet is, and not tell me what should go where, but also just open up the door to say, you know, maybe I should question that. And it really starts for me. Therapy is a really good way to do that. So find, or not love. So find someone that you trust and that you understand and that you feel like they have similar language to you that you can understand. Another thing that I do is meditation. It is one of my most precious, powerful gifts because meditation helps us with neuroplasticity. It helps us to say another concept that is forebrained that's in my mind about neuroplasticity is that it's kind of like a maze that's set. And that maze is set by my intentions, what I do, how I feed it, and it's routed in a certain way based off of what I've been doing. But neuroplasticity helps to open that up. And meditation allows us to pause and disconnect from that thing that is hooking us to feeling a certain way.
Damn, that's so interesting.
Right? So it really just gives us aha moments. It gets us out of that rut and that thinking of, that it has to be this way, that it's this way.
Would you say, what do you think about this idea that, okay, sure. So I like this idea that we, especially when you're in kind of like a rut of behavior or you're exhibiting neurotic behavior, you are lost in the maze.
Yeah.
You can't find your way. What meditation allows is that you elevate your perception and you're able to see the maze. Yes.
Exactly.
And so it gives you a glimpse of like, wait, okay, I've been going this way and I've just been running into this dead end over and over again. I need to go around that other way to get, you know what I mean? Like that, that is what meditation. And another important concept, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. We have about maybe 5 more minutes.
I know.
But this is just the introductory. We're gonna dive in.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And next time there won't be it won't have been a massive storm the night before, so the interwebs connection will be okay. So a lot of people put self limits on meditation, I've noticed, and people put like obstacles and blocks in their way where they'll say like, I can't meditate because I can't turn off my thoughts. I can't meditate because my back gets sore. I can't meditate because I don't know how to sit in meditation. I can't meditate because I don't have time to meditate. And something that I really feel in my heart is that you can meditate in all sorts of different ways. So like, for example, you mentioned that when you work out, it's a form of meditation.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
And like when you're dancing, it's a form of meditation. When you're even like taking a walk, it's a form of meditation. To be honest with you, Dr. Huggins, when I'm really in a good flow state, when I'm making coffee and slinging that caffeine, it's a meditation, you know?
Exactly. And meditation, I think sometimes people, like you said, get into this rut about what meditation is, but meditation is a lot of things. I've read that repetition is a good way to meditate. Like, you know, someone swimming, that just that motion of doing this sort of similar response, you know, for a period of time helps us to really kind of connect and be more mindful. Running, or even honestly, I have practiced just deep breathing for a long time. And I really can get quickly into closing off my mind and just really staying present in the moment. But it really takes practice. And I heard to a patient once that, I can't do this, but the problem was they were, you know, their anxiety was heightened, or when, you know, they were really upset about something. But meditation is not for, it's really hard to practice in the thick of a problem. Meditation is best when we are practicing it every single day and trying to build up skills for it. And the provider said that, well, if you know, use this practice of meditating as much as, you know, looking at your phone or doing something that isn't unhealthy for you, then you would be a much better meditator, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I know that this is a topic that we're going to spend a lot of time on, and we're going to really get into because it's so important and foundational. But just for folks that maybe want to, like, you know, before, for example, before we get together again on the next stream, which might be in a week, it might be in a couple weeks, what is just a way that folks can start practicing breathing techniques as they live as they go through their lives? What are some practical breath work steps that folks can take?
Okay. All right. So one thing I would like everyone to do, if they can, just make sure that you can take out maybe just 5 minutes of your day. If we don't have 5 minutes, something's wrong. Like, we need to reevaluate our lives. Right?
That's true.
Right. Yeah. So just take 5 minutes and get curious with that, and just get somewhere. You don't have to sit in lotus, full lotus, half lotus. You don't have to be in some crazy vine or laying on the floor. You know, wherever you can feel comfortable seated, you know, wherever you feel that you're not gonna, your back isn't hurting or you're not in pain, get somewhere, or stand. Get somewhere where you can just take 5 minutes and just focus on your breath. Like, maybe an anchor somewhere in your body. I like to use my heart, that's just me, but maybe someone wants to use their head, their lungs. Like, focus on one part of our bodies and just take 5 minutes to take really deep breaths in and deep breaths out. And deep breaths in and deep breaths out. There are a lot of practices where they say, you know, four count second breath in, and then four count second breath out. And maybe that will get you to the 5 minutes. But then also, I post the, from my Instagram for Awareness Oasis, I post a 5 minute decompression of a meditation with a reading. And so that's another tool that people can use. So just take 5 minutes a day and see where you go.
And what do you think about the idea of, like, this for me is helpful, that I imagine, like, I'm filling up when I inhale, I'm like filling up my, I think it's called your diaphragm, but I'm like, I'm taking as deep of a breath as I possibly can. I'm filling up with as much air as I possibly can. And I typically kind of will hold it for like a beat, and then I'm releasing all of it, and you're releasing every little bit of air you possibly can until there is no air left. And you hold that for a beat, and then you take the air in again. What do you think about that as a
We are filling up our lungs, like, as much as possible, filling up, and then just release. You know, it really, I've used that just for meditation. I've used that to quit smoking. I've used that for a number of things. And it really helps us to break up the pattern of just monkey mind rambling over and over and over again about what I have to do, what I did, how bad am I, what this person did, what they said. I mean, our brains are beautiful thought making machines, and it's going to do its job, but we don't have to attach to what those thoughts are. And meditation helps us to detach from our brain, because my brain says some very disturbing things, but I don't associate with that, because I don't allow my brain to dictate who I am.
The other aspect too is, no matter what activity that you are meditating within, whether you're doing dishes, whether you're going for a run, whether you're on the bench press, whether you're doing sit-ups, whether you're whatever, that practice of really focusing on your breath and taking those deep intentional breaths, that I promise will help you. whatever it is that you're doing. Because a lot of times when I get really anxious, I notice I'm not breathing. I'm taking really short little breaths. I'm not breathing. And sometimes it's just that simple that I just have to remind myself to take deep, calming breaths and focus on the breath. And that alone will help to bring down that anxiety. So
exactly. And really most emotions, really the height of it lasts for 90 seconds, whether it's a craving for something or whether you're like really upset and angry in the height of something, really only lasts for 90 seconds. So if you can just pause and take a breath, I'm not saying change that emotion. I'm not saying run away from it and figure out where it is. Just get curious with what's happening in our bodies. You know, it makes a really big difference. Yeah.
I love that. Just take 5 minutes and get curious about what is happening in your body. Get curious about how you breathe. You know, breathing is freaking beautiful. It feels amazing. I mean, we're engaging with our environment when we breathe. I imagine like an ocean, like a wave pulling back and then breaking on the shore when we're breathing. Like breathing is amazing.
Right. Exactly. That's one of my, favorite things about the ocean is just seeing that repetitive over and over again, and you can just really get to disconnect from the rambling of our minds and just kind of just take a breath, and you know, this is so great. I love it.
What do you think about, because I got to run because of my time constraints.
So yeah,
before, just before I let you go and you let folks know how they can find you on the internet and all that kind of stuff, what do you think about taking 3 deep breaths together right now on this
show? Yeah, I love that. Right, let's do that.
I love it too. All right, ready? On 3.
1, 2, 3. Awesome.
That was so nice.
Good.
So nice. That was a good way to end the stream and a good way to start the Friday and start the weekend. So before I let you go, Dr. Huggins, let folks know where they can find you on the internet, how they can get in touch with you if they would like to.
Yes. So I have my website, awarenessoasis.com. I also can be found on Instagram and also Facebook, LinkedIn for Awareness Oasis.
Is your handle just Awareness Oasis on Instagram?
Yeah, Awareness Oasis. That's it. Yeah. So.
And you put up really helpful videos and stuff like that, and little meditations and stuff. So.
Yes, I hope so. I'm excited about it. I love the way it's forming and this community is sort of building. So yeah.
I'm excited about this project. I'm excited about demystifying psychiatry and psychoanalysis with you. I'm excited about breaking down obstacles and limitations and really connecting across all sorts of perceived limits. This is exciting and it feels right. And I can't wait. I cannot wait for our next session. So. Thank you, Dr. Huggins.
Great. Yes. All right. Take care.
And if you want to come through, I'll be at the coffee shop this afternoon, so I'll hook you up.
Yeah, cool. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Much love. Peace.
What be worth the waiting? What amounts to nothing? Better 9 to 5, I'm pushing weight or something. These was 2 for 5, bro. Ain't no way he buffing. Bugging used to losing dozens, used to booze for buzzing. It's a body of water, ain't no wave, buddy. Shit, I put that on her body. The type of dude say that Q ain't dope, who the nerve of him? Type of dude see you Q, what's up, put the swerve on him. That's a living legend, that's unusual. Q's a living headache, also usual. We ain't eye to eye, what you gon' do me for? I'll be in is watching Judge Judy, bro. There's no place for quitters, quitters duly know. When life ties you down, beloved, chew the rope. When you swimming in lemons, get them by the throat. Squeeze them to the pulp and fill a cup of something for the folks. It seems the grass grow where the halves go. It seems the asphalt full of assholes. What will be and come to pass. If you heed the need, you take the task. What you mad for? I done seen the best of them. Quit your shy winning. I done seen the least of these chumps. Dipped out like Reggie Kenneth. Old business cliches. Fake friends, fame. Body image first they dreaded, now they get it. A regular Rocky Dennis, quality Chris's. Chosen name, no gimmicks. I rock the wrist and neck of the wrist and neck all in it. I rock Colgate's and Crest when the disrespect authentic. Not what they call abstract, is what we simply call.
If I can imagine it better.
Oh, yeah.
Before that, you were saying that you need depth to understand depth.
Okay, so, I mean, living things in this plane of existence obviously experience four dimensions of movement or existence, which is height, width, depth, and time.
Right. Time is the fourth dimension.
So you can't exist without height, you can't exist without width, you can't exist without depth, without any of these things. Right.
Right.
You wouldn't exist in the way that you exist now, at least. I mean, like,
right.
Maybe you exist in some other way. But, like, we're not trying to exist in some other way. We're trying to figure out how to exist in this way.
Right.
Which is you need these three things, first of all, the physical dimensions.
Yeah.
But then there's a fourth dimension, which, I mean, there's probably more dimensions too, but for like, our...
That's something that I think most people can kind of wrap their heads around. The time is the fourth dimension.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's something that we all experience. As you flow through life, you experience that shit.
Yeah, and it's essentially just your space of existing in. Just like your height, width, and depth is your physical space of existing in. Your time is your physical space of another... higher, I'm doing air quotes now, higher dimension.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And just like, you, so you're actively, without even, since we are technically kind of like master of height, of like the first three dimensions, height, width, depth, we don't experience them like in the way that you experience time, like we do experience
them. Right.
Like I can reach out and shake your hand.
Right.
Like I can drink my coffee.
But we're gonna do a fist bump right now.
It took three dimensions to make that happen. Yeah. It also took time. It couldn't have happened instantaneously.
Right, right, right.
So just like you can't exist without width, height, or depth in a three dimensional plane, in a three dimensional plane that is also moving through time, you can't exist without a period of time to exist within. You can't exist instantaneously.
Right.
If you existed instantaneously, you wouldn't be here. Like, none of us would be here.
What do you think about the idea that what we call the source of all things, the source of all life, or what
oh,
we
it's
call
just,
black hole?
It's the now.
Is possibly that so the collapsing the, of time.
So the source of everything is just this weird thing that I don't fully understand yet. Some kind of, something to do with cavitation, though, that's for sure.
Cavitation?
Cavitation. Look into that.
Like, is that how a black hole works? Like, it
I mean, probably. Probably.
Okay.
Cavitation is, like, how electricity works. It's how gravity works. It's how the universe operates.
It's how the universe operates.
It's through... It doesn't, like... it works off, there was a really genius scientist in the 1800s named Pierre Teilhard Chardin, and he was like a PhD in biology and physics and math and fucking like literature. I'm not kidding. He had a PhD in like 8 different subjects. Oh, he was one of the smartest dudes ever. And he wrote like lots of books, obviously. And one of them was a book called Omega Point. Or no, I'm sorry, The Phenomenon of Man.
Okay.
And in The Phenomenon of Man, he first off, like the first half of the book is he like goes into like what happened from like nothingness to complex life in excruciating detail.
Is it kind of rough to get through?
Even for someone like me that like craves that kind of stuff, yeah. A lot of technical terms in there, a lot of them. But then the second half goes into this idea he has called Omega Point, where like in his time and even now, scientists believe in this great expansion, this idea of a great expansion. They believe in the Big Bang. They believe, right?
Yeah.
And he said, no, that's kind of dumb. He said, it's probably not expanding. It's probably, because there's movement.
Collapsing.
It's collapsing. And it's not collapsing. He described it more of like a vacuum.
Okay.
So that creates more order. It's more orderly than a collapse.
And also the way that I'm obsessed with the shape of a torus. Because I think that's how, when I see my chakras, when I'm in really deep meditation, psychedelic experiences, I see my chakras as these spinning toruses.
Yeah.
The torus is simultaneously collapsing and expanding.
I would love to send you lots of videos, but like if you actually watch them, like, not that I'm not saying that you're trying to avoid watching them. I know you're busy.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, they are like, most of them are like an hour long and like pretty in depth. Yeah. But like, you know, I mean, dude, it goes into all this stuff, dude. I would love to send you this video on a guy named Schauberg, Victor Schauberg,
okay,
called the Water Wizard. He was a brilliant natural scientist, like in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and he died in like 1940 or 30 or something.
Okay.
But he was killed by the government.
Yeah,
they even go into it in the documentary. I mean, kind of. They just touch on it.
What was his name again?
Victor Schauberg. I could just send you the documentary. It's called It's called The Water Wizard.
Okay.
But his whole thing is spirals. Everything works in spirals, and it does. You know, Fibonacci sequence, like the Mandelbrot syndrome. You know, the Mandelbrot, like fractals.
Yeah.
That's the Mandelbrot syndrome. They call it that because you know, Sir Drake Mandelbrot, whatever, discovered it. It was a mathematical equation he invented that was like an expression of pi.
Does it have to do with Fibonacci?
The Fibonacci sequence was another sequence that also is an expression of pi.
Okay.
So they're both the same thing, but from like different angles. And they're both fractals.
And they're both spirals.
Yes, they're both spirals. Because that's how the universe works. It is.
Okay, so folks listening at home, we got cavitation, we got spirals.
Just watch Gurren Lagann. They'll explain it all.
Okay.
have you seen the anime?
No.
All right, well. So you've seen this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
It's called the Mandelbrot syndrome.
Okay.
Yeah, and like... this is it. That's the Mandelbrot. You've seen that before, I'm sure. And if you zoom into any part, it just turns into itself again forever. And
that's
how it works. Well, it's pi. You know pi, right?
Right.
Pi can't be expressed in our world.
Right.
Yeah, the vacuum. There's that little slit vacuum in there. It's pulling everything together. Like, you see it everywhere. Like, it's cavitation. Everything's a vacuum. It's not expanding. It's moving inward. And,
dude, homeboy is blowing my mind right now.
But the other thing is that because of non-Euclidean geometry, you can't tell. That's another thing I'd love to send you a video on is non-Euclidean geometry.
Okay.
Which is, non-Euclidean is like, I can shoot a quick little short of it or something. But because of how it works, you can never really experience it like the way that it's actually happening. Because unfortunately, we live on top of like the surface of non-Euclidean geometry, which causes. I hope I can just find a quick short for it real quick.
And then, were you referencing an obscure anime earlier?
Gurren Lagann. It's not that obscure. Okay. It's actually quite well known.
Well, it's quite well known. I just don't know anything about anime.
But it's very good. It's it's the sequel. It's the unofficial sequel to Neon Genesis Evangelion. Like it's just.
Okay.
You probably don't know Neon Genesis. It's the most famous anime ever made.
I run up against the time constraint. I really want
Have you heard
to
of that
get
one?
Into anime.
Neon Genesis?
Yeah. I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah. So,
I've heard of, what is it, Attack on Titan? That's an anime, too. Right?
Yeah, but that doesn't go into what we're trying to get into.
Okay.
Like, Gurren Lagann is about secret societies.
Okay.
Like, hurting kids to get to get esoteric results.
Oh, shit.
It's okay. Literally about that. Yes.
Gurren Lagann?
Gurren Lagann is not about that. Gurren Lagann is very, very bright and fun and happy.
Okay.
It's the opposite. It's why it's the unofficial.
Okay.
It's why it's called the unofficial sequel.
Okay, got
because
it.
But it's also, I mean, I could get into it if you'd like seen it or something, but it's also like, it is, my mom's calling me. I'm waiting for it.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
So, like, non-Euclidean would, come on, just give me, I thought I had it. So, like, as you move around things, they bend with you. So things, like, bend and curve. So if something stretches, you stretch with it. And so you never notice the stretching because you're part of... It's hard for me to...
That's it. He's showing me video. It's like it's called, what is it, 3D modeling of non-Euclidean geometry.
Yeah.
He's showing me.
This
is my machinist homie right here, everyone. He's going to be on the podcast soon.
Like, here's a video that I watched explain a long time ago that explained it for me well, but, like...
another example of a house. See if you notice anything suspicious as I walk through it.
Like 5 minutes ago. So.
Did you catch it? This four-room house actually only has 3 rooms: red, green, and blue.
Because
this
demo
surprised me a lot because I originally thought it would be super.
I wanted to get to something that's more substantial to what I'm trying to talk about. Maybe the T-bomb won't be good.
This is a weird one. We're on a hill that sloped up, but to get up the hill, we can go down the tunnel and end up on top.
Oh, weird.
So non-Euclidean geometry is the idea of geometry bending back onto itself.
Okay.
It's also an example of your grandpa's theory.
That's interesting.
I'll try to find a better example of it.
Yeah, you can send it to me later.
But yeah, I don't know where we are in this conversation. I kind of understand what it's. I remember what we're talking about.
The water wizard was like.
Oh yeah, with spirals. Yeah, and well, like the reason
we're talking about the nature of the universe and the structure.
Yeah,
and everything.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works. It's all spirals, like.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like a spiral thing, like you know, your DNA is a spiral.
DNA is a spiral.
It's the double helix. Like.
Yes.
You know you. When you run water through a hyperbolic funnel, which is a funnel that's produced off of math, like where each step is like incrementally like more and more curved, so that it's like it's an expression of inertia.
Okay.
Like when you, like a hyperbolic line is an expression of inertia that starts slow and then it goes like that. You've seen like that.
Yes. Asymptote.
It has to. Yeah, it has to do with, like, your, you know, a cost of living, for instance.
Yeah.
But, like, if you can build a funnel, you can get 2 of those and build a funnel with it. And when you do, Victor Schauberg did this, 3D tunnel, like a whole funnel. The water that goes down is identical to a double spiral, to DNA. It looks just like DNA. It looks like a double spiral helix. Yeah.
Whoa.
Which isn't surprising, because, like, you know, water is where...
So explain that just one more time, so I can listen back to this. When you take... You require 2 funnels for that?
No.
It's just one funnel that is mathematically designed to emulate inertia.
It's... So a hyperbolic funnel is...
Hyperbolic funnel.
Yeah, so it looks like this, you know, the one with the little penny that goes around and around.
Okay.
But when you stem water down it... It's in the what's it called? It needs to be really long though. I don't know if anybody has the correct setup that he did. And I'll just click on the whole fucking documentary.
Now homie's creating dead air.
I'll click on
this file.
I'll click on the whole documentary here. Let's see if I can find it. It's really early in this thing. Let's see if I can just see if I can hit on it.
Dude, I gotta get me a hyperbolic funnel. And then when you run water through it, it emulates the double helix and the DNA that we have.
I'm gonna be sending you this. You're gonna dig this. I can't run around, man. Watch this, but watch Utopia. Please watch Utopia.
Okay.
All right, so.
He designed and the a old funnel utopia
based on the hyperbolic spiral in which the stream of falling water formed a dramatic spiral.
Yeah,
Victor's son, Walter Schauberger, searched for a mathematical formula to explain his father's findings. He designed a funnel based on the hyperbolic spiral in which the stream of falling water formed a dramatic spiral pattern.
Wow, it's really beautiful, too.
Seen from above, it looks like a spiral nebula in space. Further down in the hyperbolic Schauberger funnel, the pulsating double helix reminds us of the DNA spiral. A coincidence?
Wow.
Could be a
miracle. Yeah.
Wow.
A coincidence.
Coincidence.
I love old British documentaries.
Me too.
So I'll send you that video. Okay. You'll like this one because it has a lot about, like, Victor Schauberger discovered, he created this whole line of copper tools for gardening that get better results with your gardens.
Okay. Okay, and I want to talk to you about...
and then water, treating your water. You can buy Victor Schauberger funnels.
Okay.
Water that's been run through his funnels have been scientifically shown to be more to be active water. They have higher, it has higher electromagnetic activity, much higher.
Is it the same as a hyperbolic funnel?
It's aerated. It's a hyperbolic funnel with some, with at the very bottom, it has this, like, this diffuser. That, so it runs through the hyperbolic funnel just like you saw, and at the bottom it diffuses out, like,
okay.
And that causes aeration.
Okay.
And so it's supposed to be extremely good for your water.
It sounds like it.
Have you seen the
movie? What's it called again?
I'm just going to send you this. I'm going to send this documentary. So, like, it's
I'm
all
in it. I want to buy the device.
Hyperbolic funnel.
Okay.
Yeah, hyperbolic. Or you can just type in a Schauberger.
Schauberger
funnel.
Schauberger funnel, okay.
But I'll send this to you.
Dude, right, I got to get one of those.
Yeah, it's not very expensive. They're just like,
I would imagine.
It's like $20
a
month.
Yeah.
All right, I just sent you the
okay,
the link for that video. But have you seen the movie, the what's it called? The Secret Life? No. The Water, the Great Mystery?
No, I haven't seen that one.
That was like a popular one for the one where they discovered where if you yell at water and then you freeze it.
That's the Japanese scientist.
Yeah. So Water, the Great Mystery was the documentary that came out in the early 2000s that was about that whole study.
Okay, because then there was this kind of goofy one called What the Bleep Do We Know?
No, What the Bleep Do We Know is an awful movie.
It's pretty shitty.
Yeah. They always take these high concepts and then
they make it dumb.
And they just jerk off all over them.
Yeah.
Like, but Water, the Great Mystery, it is like the documentary, and it's got the Japanese guy in it. He's sitting there with an interview talking about it.
Okay.
And yeah. So you think about, like, okay, so, and then in that movie they also are like, they make a critique, a point that, like, look at how our water moves through the system inside of our cities. Like, so in the documentary they go into that not only does water not like to be yelled at, it doesn't like to move in like 90 degree turns.
Oh.
And it doesn't like to be constrained, like, in the pipes. And so, but that's what we do with all of our water everywhere. And we have effectively dead water, like, coming out of taps. Like, very low electromagnetic activity in it. And it's unaerated, and it's just completely flat and dead. Whereas, like, you know, water you get out of a stream or out of, like,
right,
a spring.
A spring.
Like, you can actually take a voltmeter and you can measure volts in it. It'll read.
Wow.
It's extremely active. It's aerated, it's full of minerals and goodness.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not just the minerals and goodness though, man. Like, they discovered in that movie, the documentary Water, the Great Mystery,
Yeah. They
go into how things will actually change the molecular structure. Water, the molecular structure of water is extremely sensitive.
Yeah.
And it'll change. It'll physically change depending on, like, outside influences.
Damn.
Yes.
I gotta leave it there for now because I gotta start closing.
Okay, sorry.
I'm gonna be here forever.
Sorry, Matt. I just wanted to chill and, like, talk about this stuff.
I do too.
But
so, yeah, that's another thing we should do sometime.
We should chill. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, let me know if you're free about that.
Okay.
We should do
that. Sounds good. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Thank
you.
I spend most of my days now in my garden growing food and medicinal plants and shit that we smoking on now type of thing. And pondering the next moves, you know what I'm saying? Like, What the fuck is going on out here? We all know something is, you know, around the corner. And we feel it in our souls, it's manifesting itself in our art even. The movies we make are largely dystopian, post-apocalyptic. I think we are just trying to make sense of it somehow. And that's cool. Sometimes it just be them seasons. Predatory capitalism and all the isms, you know what I'm saying? And everybody's fed up and people don't know what to do. So we make our art, and art is beautiful. But art is also the truth. So we know, you know, come on, you know. You know, you know, you know. So what are you doing about it? Most people just waiting for something to happen without even preparing for anything. You know what I'm saying? Right now, Ukraine, power off. Venezuela, they set the power off. Just this week, 44 million people, South America, power off. That's how we start modern warfare nowadays. You just cut the power and the internet off. Get out 1 week without the little faucet running, the little water coming out, your refrigerator not being on and shit. The diabetes medication not being cold. And you asked out. Make your actions match your ambitions to survive. You need to get ready like we are. That means being in shape. That means being in touch with your ancestors and your spirituality. You feel me? What's gonna come to pass is what's gonna come to pass. All that voting and all that shit, you can do that, that's cool, but that ain't gonna stop it. It's already on the way. You know what I'm saying? So, just buckle up, have a good time. You know, security is largely a superstition. It is not existing nature. Life is either a grand adventure or nothing, baby. Go have your adventure, because I'm having mine. Big Sin, peace out. One love. Yeah.